Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless you. Thank you. What an honor it is to be here. I'm grateful to share this time this evening, not only with Brian Brown, who gave me a wonderful introduction, but also with Senator Santorum, one of my dear friends and a great patriot for the cause. And by the way, I think most of you know that if you're able to stay a few minutes after the program, we're going to do my Fox show from here tonight. And let me express my gratitude to Bob Vanderplaats and the wonderful staff, particularly Julie from Family Leader, for accommodating us, and Jeff Cullen and this fantastic church who has been so willing, because this all popped up just today. And I was going to be here, but Fox decided, well, we want to go live with all the announcement of the vice presidential candidate. I said, you can go live, but I'm going to be in Iowa tonight. And so if you want to be live, I guess you'll be in Iowa too. So here we are. Now, the good news is we did tape half of the show in New York earlier and then got here very quickly, so we will be finished with the first half of the live show at 7:30. So if you're wondering how long will I be here, you'll be out of here at 7:30. In fact, we're going to tape the end of the show before we do the beginning of the show. I don't expect you to understand how that works. That's okay, because I don't understand it either. There's a lot of things I don't understand, but I understand one thing. Thank you. I'll get your check to you later. And a coupon for Chick-fil-A. How's that? So there you go. I want to say to you that when I was a little kid, I used to be so afraid of something happening to me. And I'm almost embarrassed to tell this, but it wouldn't be the first time I've told some embarrassing thing about myself or written about it. But for some reason, and I've never been able to understand this, when I was in the first grade and my parents would drop me off at school, I was so afraid that they would not come back to get me. Maybe that tells you something about the way I behaved and my relationship with my parents. But I had this horror that every day after school, I would go out and nobody would be there to get me home. And this was before I got old enough to ride my bicycle home or walk by myself. And I just remember how terrified I was that I was going to get left behind. Maybe some of you have that kind of concern. Now, frankly, if you're in your 40s, it's a little embarrassing that you still feel that way. But this went on for quite a few months, and I'm not sure exactly why I felt that way, and I don't even know how I got out of it. I just remember standing on the corner of my school, crying my eyes out like a little girl that didn't get invited to the birthday party, because I thought nobody was going to come get me. I've seen the terror in a child's face at a mall. I'm sure you have too. When a child gets separated from his or her parents, and the look of sheer anguish and horror in the face of the child as that child roams about the mall till someone finally says, here, honey, come with me and we'll find your parents. Of course, we find out later the parents have moved and left no forwarding address, but I wouldn't have blamed my parents had they done that to me. But that feeling of being left alone, it's a horrible feeling. Let's face it, a lot of the things that we end up doing in life, we do because we feel the peer pressure. And peer pressure is often that incredible feeling we have of wanting to be with whatever is going on and do whatever is being done because we don't want to be left out. The fear of being by ourselves, the fear of not having somebody to share the experience, it's an incredible terror that a lot of people never get over. And my guess is that there are some behaviors that some of you participated in as teenagers, not because you wanted to, but because somebody persuaded you and you didn't want to be the only person in that group that said no. I'm very fortunate that I was allergic to smoking. I mean, I couldn't get near it. It just, to this day, chokes me up. I've never had a cigarette in my mouth, and it wasn't because I'm a moral giant and because I'm so strong and resistant. It's because it simply was not something I was able to physically accommodate. But even if I could have, think about how illogical it is to inhale into your lungs a substance that if you were to stand near a house fire, you would immediately want to turn from. I mean, I've never seen anyone go up to a house that's burning and say, "Hey, free smoke, let's go." I mean, the same chemicals that come out of a cigarette are the same chemicals that come out of the back of a Greyhound bus. I've never seen anyone at the bus station get down on his or her knees, put lips around the tailpipe and say, "Whoa, that's good." Everything in our physical body causes us to want to reject the very idea of doing that. Now, I know a lot of people who drink alcohol, and that's not an issue for me because I realize people have different attitudes. For me, it wasn't that I was a Baptist, although everyone assumes that was my issue. It was because I smelled it, and it tastes like something that had already been in somebody's mouth, not something I wanted in mine. And I remember when a friend handed me a beer in high school and said, "Here, try this." And I smelled it, and I said, "My gosh, that smells awful. It smells like something that's been sitting out and is ruined." My friend said, "You have to develop a taste for it." I said, "Let me see if I get this straight. Something that I have a natural aversion to, that is naturally repulsive to me, I'm supposed to continue putting this in my mouth to a point that I've broken down my resistance and I'm able to first tolerate and at some point perhaps enjoy something that naturally I don't want anything to do with." He said, "Well, I've never thought about it that way, but yeah." Now, I'm a very logical person, and frankly, that just didn't make any sense to me. But let's face it, we do a lot of things in life because of the peer pressure, which means we do things not because it's what we want to do, but it's because what we feel the crowd has already decided, and we don't want to be alone. Being alone is one of the scariest things that a human being faces. Public speaking is the number one fear in America. I'm not making this up. Study after study have shown that more Americans are afraid of public speaking, which is the number one thing on the list, than they are of dying, which is number two. I understand that because I've done some public speaking in which I was dying the entire time I was doing it. And the reason that public speaking is so frightening to most of us is because, like right now, I am all alone right here. If I mess this up, it's not like I can blame Bob Vanderplatz. I will blame Rick Santorum, but I cannot blame Bob Vanderplatz. I want to tell you something that I saw happen a couple of weeks ago. It was a remarkable moment. Wednesday, 2 weeks ago, when people by the hundreds of thousands lined up to go get a chicken sandwich at a Chick-fil-A restaurant, and a lot of people couldn't understand what was going on, I think I understand just a little bit of it. It was when people got in those lines, and even though they sometimes would sit in their car idling a tank's worth of gas, are standing in line for 2 and 3, and I heard reports of 3 and 4 hours. And yet they weren't angry about it. They didn't take their chicken sandwich, throw it on the floor, and stomp on it. Why would they tolerate that? Let me tell you why. Because that was a day when a lot of people in this country looked around and realized they weren't alone. They realized they weren't alone. You see, this wasn't about Dan Cathy or something he said. It was about when mayors of United States cities actually used the position of a power and authority that they held and said that they wouldn't welcome a company because someone affiliated with the company had a point of view that they disagreed with. And there were a lot of us who said, "Whoa, it's one thing to disagree. It's one thing to even argue and to call names, but to begin to use the power of government to put your boot on our throat and tell us to shut up and go away, that we are not welcome in places where we still have to pay taxes. There were a lot of us who said, that's a bridge too far. And on that day, a lot of people in America stood and spoke. But what I want you to understand is that it was not so much the pleasure of the sandwich. It was the unmitigated joy of looking around, not just here in Iowa. And I saw some video footage that was stunning to me. My friend Randy Davis from Ottumwa had gone to the mall, and he took his, I guess it was his iPhone camera, and he started at the beginning at the check stand, and he just followed the line. And I thought, how long is this going to last? And just panning that crowd, I thought it would never end. And yet across the country, there were no reports of people getting into fights and fussing and fighting over chicken sandwiches. And you know why? Because it was the joy of looking around and saying, I'm really not alone after all. My view as a believer, to believe in traditional marriage and to believe that it's right to protect life from the moment of conception, is not a view that makes me all by myself out here. In the book of 1 Kings, you may remember the story of Elijah, who had this incredible moment of great victory. And then he found out the king was chasing him and had threatened, in fact said, I'm going to kill you. Now, folks, when government says, I'm going to kill you, whether it's I'm going to put you out of business or I'm going to physically take your life, that is not a good thing when you look around and you realize government is bigger than just me. And Elijah was really concerned about this. In fact, not just concerned, he ran, he hid, and he crawled up under a juniper tree. And this prophet who was so bold and had such courage now cowers under a juniper tree, which is a scrub bush. And he says, God, I'm the only one you got left. I'm the last man standing. I'm all alone. And they're coming after me. A lot of you feel like Elijah. Maybe you've crawled up under your own juniper tree. Maybe you've gone out there to stand in front of the Planned Parenthood Center and passed out brochures, and you were the only one that showed up that day. And you went home and got up under the juniper tree and said, God, I'm the only one that cares about this. Some of you perhaps have gone to register voters, and you got cursed at and screamed at. And you went home and got up under your juniper tree and said, I'm the only one left. And some of you have gone out there and you signed petitions and you stood and you worked so hard. And I want to say what you guys did through the family leader and all the organizations, pro-family organizations in this state, if that's Barack Obama, tell him I'm not available till after later on tonight. I won't be able to take his call. But so many of you in this state, you worked your hearts out and you changed America by saying to some judges who thought they were legislators, no, you can't. And then you got all kinds of grief for it from family members and friends. And you wondered if anybody really noticed. And you went home up under your juniper tree. And you thought, I was all by myself. And I want to explain to you what happened, I believe, a couple of weeks ago was as people stood in line across this great land, standing in line for a restaurant, a lot of which people had never been to before, what they found out was, I'm not alone. There's a bunch of us out here who have not yet kneeled before the false gods of this world, who have not yet decided that it is okay to kill unborn children, that it is not okay for us to just automatically, arbitrarily, and artificially change the definition of marriage that God Almighty has not yet approved a change in. And a lot of you that day, it was not that you were angry at anyone, because you weren't. You were quite happy. It was that on that day you looked around and realized you weren't alone after all. And there was lots of room up under the juniper tree, but it was better to get out from under it and realize that the battle is far from over. And my dear friend, I want to say tonight, you've had an incredible day. And I hope that one of the things that happen as you bring this day to a conclusion is that the first thing you say is, you know what, it's not about me after all. I had an interview with someone from Time Magazine a little over a year ago when I made the decision that I would not run for president in this election cycle. And I could tell the reporter couldn't get it because I said, you know, I look around and one of the things that I've come to the conclusion, this is a country of about 310 million people, and I don't buy into the idea that out of 310 million people, there's only one person, just one, who could possibly be president. I said, we've got a guy who thinks that now, and that hasn't worked out too well for us. And I refuse to believe that in a country this large, with as many great people as we have, that there's only one person. And I said, that defies everything about this great country of ours, because our country was a country that is to be ruled by servants, not by princes and kings and lords. And anyone who is willing to be a servant and rise to the occasion could potentially hold the office. That reporter would go ahead and later write that she was convinced I wasn't going to run because I just didn't see myself as the only person. And I said, thank God. I wouldn't vote for me if I was so filled with myself and so overwhelmed with a megalomania to the point that I believed that I and I alone was the only person on God's earth who could do a particular job. Because, my friend, it is not about me. It is not about you. It is about what God put us on this earth to do. And when He calls us, He empowers us to do the task, whether or not we think we are prepared. And sometimes we think we are incredibly prepared, and God doesn't use us anyway. Because if He were to do it, we would be so filled with ourselves and be convinced that He did it because we were prepared rather than we were empowered. When is it we're ever going to understand that we are not playing by the simple and sometimes ridiculously ugly rules of mere human politics, but rather by something far bigger than that? And God has not called us to simply find out if we can beat the other side, but the ultimate is to find out whether or not we are faithful. And when we can look around and find that there are others who are faithful, it is the greatest encouragement of our souls. And there are some things to which we should be faithful. Faithful to our calling. And that calling, by the way, is not a particular profession or vocation. I think one of the big mistakes we've made in the modern contemporary church is the notion that a calling means specifically that we have to be tied to a particular job from which we receive a paycheck. That's not biblical. It's cultural. There's nothing in the scripture that says that there is some particular magic calling that makes some people get their paycheck from a church or a Christian organization, and they're closer to God than the people who teach school or who serve as police officers or who work behind the counter at a donut shop. Every person is called. And our calling is to be faithful. Faithful to the task that is ours. We're also supposed to be faithful to our capacity. One of my favorite parables in the New Testament is that of Jesus and the parable of the talents. He said one man was given 10, one was given 5, one was given 1 talent. A talent was a sum of money, not necessarily I can sing, I can dance, I can. Vanderplas was very happy to hear that because he can't dance. I'm pretty sure of that. Now, the talent meant that there were different sums that were given to various people. And you remember the story, and I'm not going to give you the whole long version, but the Reader's Digest version, of course, is that the person who had 10 went and took the 10 that he had, made 10 more with it, person who had five took his five, made five more with it, ended up with 10. And the person who only had one took that one, buried it in the ground, and didn't lose anything, but didn't gain anything either. The master comes back and he says, okay, what have you done with what I gave you? The person that had 10 said, hey, you gave me 10. I took that and made 10 more. I've doubled your investment. Well done, good and faithful servant. Second one. Well, you gave me 5. I took the 5. I turned it into 10. I doubled the investment. And the master said, well done, good and faithful servant. Then there was a third one. He said, you know, I thought you were kind of hard to deal with. I was so afraid if I made an investment and I lost, you'd clobber me. So I just took mine, hit it in the ground, and I didn't lose anything, but I didn't gain anything. Here it is. You got exactly what you had to start with. And the master said, you lazy, slothful, wicked servant. I'm going to take the one you had, and I'm going to give it to the guy who had 10. It's kind of like spreading the wealth around in reverse, just so you'll understand how that worked. Now, the point was that he did not expect the person who had 5 to end up with 20. He just expected the person who had at least 1 to do something with the one that he had. God never calls you to do something beyond your capacity. But by golly, he does expect you to use the capacity you have and do with it what he has allowed you to do. And somebody else may occupy a more prominent place in the spotlight and in center stage. It does not mean that they are more faithful than you, even if you work and operate in obscurity. Because if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, where you're supposed to be doing it, as well it's supposed to be done, you are as important and as successful because you're being faithful to your capacity. I'm never expected to be faithful to somebody else's capacity, only faithful to the capacity that God has called me to. And that is true for every one of us. If you can't make a speech, then don't expect that that's what you're going to be doing. But maybe you can ask people to sign a petition. Maybe you can ask people to register to vote. Maybe you can stand outside a polling place and hold a sign. Everybody can be faithful to their capacity. And everybody can be faithful to the convictions. God calls us for that, to be faithful to our convictions. One of the reasons that I'm convinced that America has fallen to the level it has fallen is because many of us have not developed the convictions, and therefore we've not stood with them. You see, I have a different belief than some people, and it kind of puts me at odds with many people that I rub shoulders with all the time. And it's this: I don't believe that ultimately the real challenges, problems of this great nation of ours are altogether political. I know there are some people who think that if we just elect the right person president, everything's going to be fine. We just get the right person in the Senate or the House or the governor's office, it'll be fine. Now, with the exception for when I ran for governor, and that was really true, I wanted to believe that anyway. And the fact is, we could change the entire political landscape of America, but I am convinced more than I've ever been convinced that just electing different people to run the show doesn't change the script until we as a country get back to our place where we understand that we are a nation under God, conceived by His own grace and purpose. And when we turn our backs on His purpose and His providence, it doesn't matter who we elect, we will still be wanting and wishing, and we will not be the great nation that we were designed and destined to be. This is not a political problem. It is ultimately a spiritual problem. And we've got to be faithful also to our contentment. And by that I simply mean that our real joy in life doesn't come from something that we have or some position that we have obtained. It comes from knowing that we are right in the very center, in the bullseye of the will of God for our particular life. And if you're looking for something else to find contentment in, Whether, again, it's in some political election or some level of financial achievement that you think will make you happier, contentment comes from being in tune and in sync with God's will for your life. I've seen some really, really happy poor people. I remember going to Guatemala, working and building some churches down there back in the 1980s, and seeing some people who, when I say didn't have anything, literally didn't have anything. Nothing. They slapped tortillas together for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they ate beans and rice to put on the tortillas 3 times a day, 7 days a week. They lived in the corner of mud huts out in the jungle area, far from Guatemala City, where there was still poverty. But these were people for whom poverty would have looked pretty doggone good. And yet when they would sing hymns and they would talk about their own faith, they did it with joy, and there were smiles, even through teeth that had never seen a dentist. And they didn't know they were supposed to be unhappy. No one ever told them that what they didn't have would cause them to be unhappy, because they were filled with something better than just human happiness. They were filled with an inner joy. I've seen people dirt poor in countries around the world who were quite content because their contentment did not come from what they had or failed to have. And I've seen some people living in palatial places, staggeringly beautiful places, who are incredibly unpleasant. People I wouldn't trade places with for a moment, with whom there is not a pleasant word to be shared with anyone else in the house, who have no joy, who know, as the old saying goes, they know the price of everything and the value of nothing. And no matter what they have, they're never going to get any happier about it. Being faithful in our contentment is finding out that it's not what we have, it is what has us that gives us that ultimate sense. I say all of this because I am just so convinced that we are not responsible to deliver certain results, which is a real trap, particularly when we get involved into politics. We are to be faithful to the task. And the task is not just the election of one party over another, one person over another. The faithfulness of the task is to take a stand for that which is right against that which is wrong, to stand in the light, not in the darkness, to be willing to be voices of truth, even if it is solely and singularly the only voice of truth being spoken in a room full of lies and deceit. What we are called to is a faithfulness to pray, to vote, to learn, to encourage, but it is not to always win. When we win, it is a good thing. But we win when we're faithful. And if we're faithful enough to remember where our spiritual power comes from, that it is not from a political party. When we win to the point where we recognize that our country was not made great because of some Republicans or because of some Democrats, but it was made great because God blessed people who were on their faces in repentance before Him and acknowledged that this land could only be prosperous and good if it recognized that He's the God of our land. And when that happens, then we'll see this nation restored. Not until then. I told you as a kid I was afraid of getting left behind. Didn't really want to be out there by myself at the schoolyard and everybody else has gone home, somebody's picked them up and I'm standing there. Nobody came to get me. You don't want to be alone either. Those of you that stood out there at a Chick-fil-A somewhere found out you weren't alone. And one of the things I hope you do before you leave is look around and realize you're not alone. Get out from under the juniper tree. No point in playing Elijah. You may say, I'm the only one you have left. But if you listen to the still small voice, what he'll tell you is this. He's got plenty of people who have not bowed their knee to Baal. And he's just looking for you to get out from under the juniper tree, get up on your feet, open your eyes, look around and realize you're not alone. But even if you were, you and God can take on the whole world, and you're better off than if you had the whole crowd with you and God was on the other side. You are not alone. God bless you. Thank you so very much for your being here today. Thank you.